Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. We're also on the World Wide Web at www.cfrc.ca. Ani Nichkime, Doug Farquhar, Dijni Kaz, Miwa Sean's story, Esna Minwa, Nishnabi Nawewin. Here we go. Aboriginal voices on this, well, fairly mixed weather pattern we've had for the last week and a half, and probably for the next week and a half. This is where spring and winter duel it out. Sean, we've had...
Did you get the snow, Doug?
Oh, yes. Not as much as probably you did. We really didn't get the...
I don't know. I heard tell it was going to be catastrophic. It was going to be the snow dumping of a century.
No, not that much.
No, that's what they were saying. Like, they're, oh, my gosh, it's going to be snow. I heard it on all the radio stations, like the other ones, not us. I mean, we tell the truth. But it was like, oh, my gosh, it's the snow apocalypse.
Oh, my.
And I was like, oh, okay.
How much snow did you get?
Not like a half an inch.
No.
Yeah.
We got more than you did.
I would say maybe an inch.
Uh-huh.
If I'm being generous, Doug, an inch.
Mm. Wow. No, we got more than that. I measured it this morning, and we got 4 centimeters of snow. But that, you know, they were talking 5 to 10, and
they were saying, "Go home, don't go out."
Well, I did.
Horrible.
I did.
I've been in worse, Doug.
Yeah. Everybody got home early yesterday. That's good. Last Friday.
Oddly, though, they didn't close the buses down for kids.
No.
Like school buses? Finally.
Yeah. Well, they don't want them to miss school. All right. Now, tonight on Aboriginal Voices, we're looking at all the issues that are happening across the country, and there's some really great spots to find, you know, podcasts about Indigenous issues, and you know, we're wondering, wow, where are we going to be going for the show today? And I have two directions. One, for this first hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Manitoba, because... In Manitoba, they have a huge problem around a landfill site in Manitoba, just west of Winnipeg. I don't know if you've heard about that one, but there was several women murdered in Winnipeg, and apparently two of them are buried in that landfill site, and what the chiefs of Manitoba have asked for is to do, an excavation of the land site to find and verify who they are and that they're there. So I had a chance to attend a press conference or press presentation, and it was the Grand Chief of the Manitoba Chiefs. And she laid it all out very, very nicely about what's happening there and why they're doing this and what the agreement was. And they did that on last Friday. So last Friday, what was the date there? March 22nd, I think it was. And so this is going to be a really interesting conversation. Well, it's not one way, because I didn't... I didn't stay for the question and answer afterwards, you know, because I think she answered it with what her announcement was. So what do you think?
She who?
The chief of the assembly, or the chief, the grand chief of the Manitoba Chiefs.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's coming up in a couple of minutes here with the... I'm going to take you right to it. But the whole idea of trying to excavate a landfill site, you know, where they put garbage and everything, you know, is going to be really difficult. And you know the prairies, they're pretty flat, especially around starting in near Winnipeg. It's just fairly flat. There's not a lot of... There are no big hills, and it's just mostly old riverbeds. So Mm-hmm. I don't know where they're going to get the soils to cover up, because what happens is as the garbage trucks, and everybody knows, they've seen them go by in cities, as the garbage trucks stop to pick up the bags or bins of whatever it is, and they put it in the back of the truck, they just put it there. When the truck's full, they drive out to the landfill site. They drive over to a certain area on the landfill site and just dump the waste in their truck. And what happens then is, at the end of the day, they put soil on top. They try to get clay to put on top, but they just put soil on top and pack it down. And that's what happens. So over, you know, several years, they've been using this landfill site, and then the Aboriginal women who were murdered and dismembered, at least two of them were dismembered, because that's what got them looking for the person who may have done this. Mm-hmm. They have someone in there, and he's going to be tried, but I think the reason that the Native Women's Association and Native Women of Manitoba are really pushing for this investigation is because then it's hard evidence, as you might say, in a trial. Here is the body part of a person, and here is a body part of a different person, and they can test that. But they've got to figure out, you know, there's a lot of CSI going on, the science into the crimes. But anyway, but I wanted to talk a bit about the reason that the Grand Chief came out to do her announcement.
Why was that?
She was at a meeting that was held in Winnipeg, and she said this is the most important meeting she's been to because all levels of government that deal with this were present at the same time in the same room hearing the requests and the reasons and the science behind why the women have asked for, and the chiefs of Manitoba have asked for the governments to come in and help with the financial part of it. And the federal government, the prime minister was there along with some people from.
He was?
Well, don't know if he was there in person, but he may have been there virtually. I'm not sure. I didn't see him, but the prime minister and some of the people behind, you know, who dealing with indigenous issues. The premier of the province was there with people who are responsible for indigenous issues. The mayor of the city of Winnipeg was there. And some of the people there from the municipality. They were all there. They all made a decision. And the federal government and the provincial government are each putting $20 million into this search. And so the search is going to start and begin, and they're going to be taking layer by layer off of this garbage dump, this landfill site. So it's going to take a while, and you know, my concern is that, you know, most of the stuff underneath probably is decayed. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to be finding or how they're going to find it. So, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's probably still DNA, some...
Yes.
I don't know. CSI something or other.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what's going to be happening. But the announcement that we're going to hear, because I was able to be part of that news scrum. I just didn't stay for the questions and answers. So
you didn't?
No.
No. Catch a bus?
No. I just had to stop at that point.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But anyway, they do have something special to offer. So would you like to hear that now?
Sure.
All right. We'll go to that now, and we'll be back to chat. This is Friday, March the 22nd, 2024, and we're going to attend a conference, and it's a meeting for the Grand Chief of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs, and you know, they're going to talk a bit about the issue around missing and murdered Indigenous women, and a meeting that she held with chiefs from Manitoba and government officials for First Nations services, And also, I believe the mayor of Winnipeg was also there.
Okay. I just want to thank you all for coming and for coming to listen to what we have to say in terms of our very historic meeting that we had today. And it was historic because of the fact that we had the federal minister as well as the deputy minister from Ottawa who was present, the premier of the province of Manitoba, and as well as the mayor of Winnipeg. And this was a request that we made on behalf of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs and on behalf of the families, the Myron and families that came today. We asked for this meeting specifically to ensure that the families didn't become political yo-yos amongst governments, because governments tend to do that. They'll make decisions and then they will send you off to the next level of government to get the answers that you seek. As you're very much aware that this work has been done over the last 15 months. And the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs, along with the families, have done a lot of work, have ensured that that we lobbied the governments and that we produced two documents. And even that is historic, that we were asked to produce a document to search the landfill for our loved ones. There has been other searches of landfills for other people. They were never asked to produce a feasibility study to see how worthwhile or how costly it would be to search the landfills. But we were asked to do that, and we did. The first initial amount that was given to do the first feasibility study was $500,000, which came from the federal government. The second document, the operational plan, which we completed in January and was given out to the province, cost $740,000. So a lot of money has been spent to convince governments to do the right thing. And today, meeting with the federal government and the provincial government, there was a commitment from them to search the landfills. The province of Manitoba committed $20 million. The federal government committed $20 million. The province also committed $500,000 for the families while they are going to be going through the trial process. And the federal government committed $200,000 for the mental well-being of the families while they are going to be going through this process, this heartbreaking process. So today is a very bittersweet day. It's a sense of relief, but yet work needs to be done. And it's timing. The work that needs to be done is timing. So I'd like to thank the families, the Mercedes Myron and Morgan Harris families, but not to forget Buffalo Woman, that we never ever did find out who she was. But we never ever did find out who her family was or where she came from. As well as Rebecca Contois. And the other countless First Nation women that are missing in this province and that are missing in this country. We pray that they will find their way home somehow, somewhere. So I'm going to hand it over to Cambria to speak. So,
which Grand Chief? First off, I would like to thank the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs for always being there for every step of the way from the very beginning of the homicide announcement on December 1st, 2022. Today and every day moving forward will be very, very tough. But we did get a commitment today of $20 million from the provincial government and from the federal government. So that's a total of $40 million to search the landfill. Wabkinu in his words said that we are going to search every cubic meter of Cell 13 where my mother, Morgan, and Mercedes are laying. They have also committed funding $500,000 as well as $200,000 for mental health supports to help the families during the hard time of the trial to come up ahead, where the families will be sitting in the room with the serial killer listening to what happened to our loved ones over the course of 2 months. I would like to say that I am very grateful for these commitments going forward, and I hope that we can continue to provide transparency to members of the public, community members, as well as the families. And I pray that one day we will see justice. Thank you. Give me those questions.
Douglas.
Yes, did you like that music?
Oh my gosh, do I ever. I always enjoy them.
Okay, I'm glad. Mark Chia in there with from Ulali. That was from Robbie Robertson's Red Road Ensemble.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Although I don't know that it is. I thought that they recorded it and then he just took it and put it on his album.
It was an invitation. All the songs on that Red Road Ensemble album were to showcase indigenous musicians from right across Turtle Island.
I realize that, Doug, but I think they recorded it previously.
Oh, they had some previously.
And then he grabbed it and said, hey, we would like to feature it on this album I'm putting together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is to help you, not me.
Mm. Yeah, but it did help them. Oh, well, Sadie Buck's on there too.
Oh yeah, she
didn't need any help. She was
she doesn't.
Yeah,
she's incredible singer.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional singer.
Yeah,
probably should say. So I'm on the news site for Google.
Oh yeah.
And I click on this, what I assume was a story, and it brought me to a Parks Canada.
Oh, yeah?
Parks Canada site. And it says here, Indigenous Connections. Parks Canada is committed to a system of national heritage places that recognizes and honors the historic and contemporary contributions of indigenous peoples.
Wow.
Their histories and cultures, as well as their special relationships indigenous peoples have with ancestral land, waters, and ice.
Oh.
Odd that they would have thrown ice in there, but okay.
No, because the ice is melting, becomes water again.
So they say. Didn't feel like it was melting the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It was super cold out. Anyways, bitingly cold, Doug.
Oh, good.
Anyway, so what they're asking is for First Nations to share place names. So indigenous connections to ancestral lands, waters, and ice are reinforced in many heritage place names.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently. So indigenous leadership in conservation, since time immemorial, indigenous peoples have been nurturing a long-term relationship with ice, lands, and waters, resulting in deep understandings of places and living systems.
Mm.
So you know what they're doing, right?
Yes.
What?
They're working hard at letting people know what's happening.
So what they're trying to do is get First Nations, indigenous peoples, to share the stories of their people,
mm-hmm.
and thereby Parks Canada can capitalize on those stories and make those stories their own. So they're collaborating with Indigenous communities across Canada. Parks Canada and Indigenous peoples are partners in conserving natural and cultural heritage and sharing the stories with these treasured places.
Mm.
So I think that's probably what will happen is, you'll get a pamphlet.
With a short story.
You'll get a pamphlet with a short story, or maybe you'll get one of those plaques.
Mm-hmm. But I would think that you would be able to get in a provincial park, probably get some kind of way to connect to an audio so you can actually walk along the trails listening to the story.
I suppose you could.
Wouldn't that be interactive?
It would be, yes. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but it could be what happens. I suppose if you went to the outpost there and there's some sort of Wi-Fi deal, and you can connect to it and with your phone and get a podcast or something like that.
Right. That'd be good.
I don't know.
I would rather hear the story from the people from that community than to walk along and read it on a plaque.
Indigenous tourism experiences. Learn firsthand about First Nation. They say Métis, but let's face it. Inuit cultures, traditions, and connections to the lands, water, and ice. Man, they're really pushing that ice, aren't they?
Yes.
Listen to indigenous voices. Share their stories, rich in history and culture. Oh, hey, Doug, we can find an experience.
Where?
I just clicked it.
Oh, okay.
Fly-in camping in Inuvik.
Okay.
Inuit guided tours and programs. Well, that sounds interesting. You want me to click on it?
No.
I'm gonna.
Okay.
So if you only have a day or two, I'm going to fly into Nunavut. Just for the day. Who does that?
I know a couple of people who went there and they were there for 6 weeks.
Yeah. Sounds like something you would do.
Not for a day.
Yeah. You? Oh, yeah, you could do that. If you only have a day or two to see Ayutthaya, I think, because that's how it's pronounced. Mm-hmm. There are many possibilities: hiking, skiing, and outfitter guided boat or snowmobile tours.
Either one of those that you would want to take in Nunavut would take you more than it. Well, don't forget, in the summertime the days are really long, and in the winter, if you're just going in for a day,
a flashlight.
Daylight is really short.
No, it's long. Oh yeah, daylight.
Daylight. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it is really short. Take a flashlight.
So, but just like this is a good conversation to have, because we do have many tourism sites right across Canada that you can go to. I'm thinking of some that in Northwest Territories, the Yukon, Northern British Columbia, in Saskatchewan, near La Ronge, and right across. I know there are more going to the east as well. But there have been camping events that you can go on, from the very expensive ones, like the National Geographic puts on, but they hire people within the communities, the indigenous communities, to be the guides and the storytellers and the sharing of knowledge. But there are others that are run locally in those communities too. And so if you and I wanted to go, we could go and cater. They would, quote, cater to what it is we'd like to learn. Not bad. Yeah. Okay. So this thing with the Parks Canada is really kind of confusing.
I can't, Doug.
Yeah.
Like it's a get-rich-quick scheme for the Parks Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to do something. Well, let's see what we can do.
I don't know. I tried to visit all the parks in Canada, all the national parks in Canada, and they keep adding some. So and they're all really far away from where I am. Yeah. Anyway.
So, yep. Go to a park.
Well, the parks are really good to have because they are protecting the lands.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. Yeah. But I guess this is a cultural thing that they're trying to do. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to think more. You and I are going to have a number of conversations about it too. So.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Because beforehand and then after, because this is going to be one of those big challenges. All right, let's go to music. Or is, hey. Is there more there?
No. Go.
Good.
Shine. Cost, but you hurt your boss and believe. Today is a day to listen. Radio stations all across Canada are elevating the voices of Indigenous people in Canada, like Tanya Talaga, an Ojibwe author and a visionary for Canada's reconciliation journey. Tanya fuses messages of truth, hope, and Indigenous inclusion through her words. In times of grief and mourning, Indigenous peoples turn to stories, culture, and tradition to heal.
Buzu, Anin, Tanya Talaga, Nigisnakas, Ka Musko Pimojija Pineshish Nigisnakas. My name is Tanya Talaga in English. My name in Anishinaabewewin is Little Bird with Big Wings, carries a heavy burden. We've been through so much for a long time, but lately it's been very heavy. And so I'm thinking about the Anishinaabe Seven Grandfather Teachings. These teachings are a guide. They are seven truths, and these teachings are handed down by our ancestors. And you know, while there are hundreds and hundreds of different First Nations from coast to coast to coast, many of us share a version of the Seven Grandfather Teachings. The teachings are respect, humility, love, honesty, bravery, wisdom, and truth. Without these teachings, we'd be lost. I wanted to tell you a little bit, too, about the teaching of love. And I can't think of a better person to help me illustrate that teaching other than Elder Sam Ashipanenskam. Now, I'm going to talk to you today not about romantic love, but about a love that comes from a love of community, of caring for one another, a love for our people. And I got to tell you, too, that I often visit Sam when I'm in Thunder Bay, and we'll often go to Tim Hortons. And when you first meet Sam, it feels like you've always known him. He's got an ease about him. He's got a warm, deep voice and a very subtle, wicked sense of humor. Sam is always there at Timmy's. Everyone knows him there. And they also know that if you're down on your luck, if you're in need of food, some coffee, a gentle ear, Sam is there for you. But like many First Nations people, Sam's also had a lot of loss in his life because of racism, because of colonization. His road to love and to peace, it has not been an easy one. I know for a fact that he works on it every single day. And I know his motivation comes from his own source of love, his love for his family and for his people, and trying to make sense of the Anishinaabeg's place in this world. And so when I ask him, why is it important that we live our life listening to these seven teachings? This is what he said. Well, you got to have some kind of guidance. When we were given this life, we were given instructions on how we should live our life, how we should remember our roles and our responsibilities, how we are all tied to nature and we're all tied to each other. Every person born is part of the continuum of life. Now, I just want you to know that Sam is a survivor of three Indian residential schools. And as you know, 150,000 of our children were taken away from their parents and their homes and their communities and sent to the government-funded, church-run schools. There were more than 140 of these schools across Canada. The goal was assimilation, to turn all First Nation, Métis, Inuit into good Canadian citizens. But we know the truth of what happened in these places. We know they did so much damage, intergenerational trauma, that we continue to live with. Sam was 12 when he went to his first of three schools. You should know that one of the schools he went to was St. Anne's on the James Bay coast. It was a notorious place that had a homemade electric chair used to discipline the students. And he also went to Cecilia Jeffrey, and that's where his cousin, Cheney Wenjack, also was a student. And so when I asked Sam, how do you do it? How did you survive? He told me it's because when he was young, living in the bush with his parents and his family, he learned everything that he needed to know, how to live on the land, how to be in lockstep with the earth and the air and the water and the trees and the animals. He learned his language. He learned his teachings. He had a good foundation. He said to me, That's what kept me whole. And I have to tell you, the teachings that Sam gives, those are the teachings that keep so many of us whole now. And those teachings are a commitment that Sam makes every single day, a commitment to love, a commitment to understand, and a commitment to make Canada a better place for all of our people. And with that, I'm going to say Chi Ming Wich.
Today is a day to listen. To learn more about how you can do something, visit DowneyWenjack.ca.
Somebody from outside that, a government person, said if you don't send your kids out, we're not going to help you. That's why I went to school. They had no choice. It was over 300 kids that went to school. And I used to cry. I was lonesome. I was wondering why I was sent here. And I didn't know why. What did I do wrong?
Does it feel like we're on the edge? Staring down at certain death. Does it feel like the story ends before it starts? We were here in these faded memories, so we were here in these fleeting stories, oh, we were here in these disappearing words, even when they start. Losing the end. It's in our blood. It's in our blood. Oh, oh, oh. It's in our blood. It's in our blood. We go just like the days is light and dark in the morning. We against the north, just like the snow we fall, we men we fade away. A month, a day, a week, a year, just like to say that we were here. We were here in these fading memories, so we were here. These fleeting stories, so we were here. And these disappearing words, even when they start, losing me there. It's in our blood.
Is the moon shining bright where you are? Is it even shining at all? Running like a white line down the middle of some old memory. Does the evening unfold in waves? The desire to be nowhere but to go out and rage, like a time when it was more than just some old memory. When you miss someone, tears you apart and then some. When you miss someone, someone you love. Is the silence time of questions, lost and profound, professing to a silhouette of trees on the ground here in front of me. When you miss someone, tears you apart and then some. When you miss someone, someone you love. Now it's here in your absence, my mind doing backflips, reserve tank running on E. Intergalactic, into the stat, searching for a memory. When you miss someone, oh, when you miss someone. When you miss someone, tears you apart and then some. When you miss someone, someone you love. When you miss someone, someone you love. When you miss someone, someone you love. When you miss someone, someone you love.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Hey, CFRC listeners. In celebration of International Women's Day, local icon Miss Emily and the Kingston Music Office are hosting an International Women's Day showcase on March 7th at the Broom Factory, with support from your friends here at CFRC. Experience a showcase celebrating the remarkable talents of women and non-binary artists in the Kingston community. Miss Emily will be hosting the night with feature performances from Clara Smallman, Julia Finnegan, Kyra Daniel, and Savannah Shea. Stay for the fireside chat exploring songwriting, creativity, and the challenges of navigating the music industry as underrepresented voices, as well as a showcase of women-led businesses in the Kingston community. It's sure to be the event of the season. Doors are at 7 p.m., and tickets can be found at ticketscene.ca.
On Saturday, March 8th at 7 p.m., join the Agnes Etherington Arts Center as they bring back their popular series, Open Secret. In this third edition, the Agnes partners with New York Film Festival, Prismatic Ground, and its artistic director, Inay Prakash, for a screening of five short works by filmmakers exploring the gaps in their relationships to ancestral homelands.